From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on Monday, June 29th, in Hwangi National Park in Zimbabwe. An American named Walter Palmer, who considers himself a recreational big game hunter, had hired a group to take him on an expedition. He wanted to kill a lion, and he paid about $50,000, reportedly, for the help in doing so. There are rules about where you can and cannot shoot a lion, so in order to stay within the law, Palmer's team had to lure the lion out of a sanctuary where it was living at the time. There are several ways to do this, and reports from Zimbabwe say that Palmer's team tied a dead animal to their vehicle, attracting a lion to follow. And it worked. A black-maned lion followed them out, and once out of the sanctuary, Palmer shot the lion, again reportedly, with a crossbow. But the crossbow strike did not kill the male, who tried to flee. Palmer's team tracked the lion for another 40 hours, and then on July 1st, he shot the lion with a rifle. His team removed the lion's head, a common practice for big game hunters, who use the heads often as trophies, often at home on their wall. The lion was a popular 13-year-old named Cecil and has been tracked by researchers for years. And this killing, as you know by now, sparked an international outcry. Walter Palmer insists he thought he was acting within the law, and he explained that he was simply pursuing an activity that he loves. This hour, I want to welcome a couple of people who wrote a piece this past weekend for the Democrat and Chronicle. They're working on conservation efforts every day, beyond Cecil the Lion, and we're going to have a conversation that goes beyond one lion. It's the basis for our hour. My guests are Pamela Reed Sanchez, Executive Director of the Seneca Park Zoo Society. Nice to have you back, Pamela.
Thanks, Evan. Good to be here.
And Larry Sorrell is the Zoo Director, and Larry, nice to have you as well.
Thank you, Evan.
Let me start by addressing some of the questions that our listeners this morning have been asking. There was worldwide outcry after news broke about the killing of Cecil the Lion last week. And in the past several days, there's been a bit of a backlash. This morning, when we teased ahead to today's conversation, I heard from several listeners who said essentially, can't we move on? It's one animal. The outrage is disproportionate. There are other injustices that don't get nearly the same attention. So let me begin this hour by addressing that sentiment. And I'm going to push back just a little bit on that. First of all, it's undeniable that there are some more serious injustices than the killing of one lion. So taken in that light, you could argue that the attention on this lion is outsized. I get that. But I don't think it's difficult to understand why the world has reacted this way, because for most people, it's essentially a new issue. It's not that we didn't know about big game hunting. But think about it. Before Cecil, when was the last time you considered trophy hunting at length? It's a collective aha moment of sorts. Many people are looking at this issue at length for the first time. And many people find it kind of revolting. It's a moment where humans are looking around saying, what are we doing? Why is this okay? How do you justify this? What makes some of us want to pay tens of thousands of dollars to fly around the world and kill a big, beautiful creature, sometimes endangered, and then put a head on the living room wall? And I know it's sometimes more complicated than that. Sometimes a big game hunt raises money for conservation. But often it is a sport for a thrill, and it's getting renewed attention now. So if you're so inclined, I'd like to hear from you. If you are a hunter, and this is probably not the kind of thing you support. We've heard from a lot of hunters who say, we are conservationists. I want to hear from you. This does seem to be a change moment, an opening, an opportunity. The killing has provoked worldwide opprobrium, and social media has certainly given it added velocity. That's why I'm not surprised. I don't think this is a problem, because the attention is going to fade on this. If you're bothered by this focus, the spike in attention for big game hunting, don't worry. It's going to subside shortly. That's how humans react to earthquakes, to hurricanes, and yes, to the killing of a lion. We're going to take this hour to talk about big game hunting, conservation, the way we treat animals, and more. That's where I start. Pamela, Larry, am I off base there?
Well, I think big game hunting is something that is something individuals have to look at and make their decision based on where they are in their life. Our issue at the zoo is the conservation impacts of a single lion death or the 200 on average, in all likelihood, elephants that were killed in the time that Cecil or Cecil was tracked. So our issue is different than the big game hunting trophy piece. Hunting is a sport that people choose to participate in, whether it's locally for deer and eating or big game hunting. And those are things that I think others have to deal with, not the Seneca Park Zoo.
But let me ask you both, about that question of where this falls in the line of hunting. I've heard from hunters in the last week who say, don't rope me in with this. Yes, I hunt for sport, but I also hunt because we have an excess deer population. I hunt for food, all of those things. And I've heard from a lot of people who hunt who say, that's not the same as flying to Africa and killing a lion and bringing the head back. What do you think, Larry?
It is fundamentally different, I believe. But again, it's if we are to believe what the dentist said, he thought he was doing it correctly with the permits available. We may never really know the truth. Again, those kinds of issues and regulations are put in place by the country of origin. They've got to make decisions that work well for them. And we have to concentrate on what are really the conservation issues.
Pamela, what do you think?
It's such a tough and individual ethical place to try to tell people what to think about hunting or fishing. You know, I said to you earlier, some people might see this as not too different than deep sea fishing and catching a marlin, which is great sport and great fun, and then you mount it at home, or a 10 buck, you know, 10 point buck that you, that's, I have trouble making the distinction, as strange as that sounds. You know, I worked at Eastman House for many years. George Eastman was a big game hunter. That was kind of an appropriate thing at that time. Is it still appropriate? For me personally, no, but I'm not a hunter. But I am a carnivore. And I believe that there is a way of hunting that is sustainable. And the bigger issue of whether we should be hunting endangered species, you know, there are six species that will probably be extinct in our lifetime due to poaching, whether it's hunting or, you know, for meat, such as lemurs and gorillas, believe it or not, or for the trophy, so tigers, ivory from elephants, rhino horn. Those to me are the much bigger issues that if we can wrap our heads around, this wasn't a single lion, this is symbolic of what's happening to endangered species. That to me is where I would like the conversation to go, because I have this feeling that we care about Cecil because he was a beautiful creature that had a name, that was well known in the community, that, you know, tourists, he was beloved to tourists. And there are an awful lot of animals out there that don't have names that are going extinct. And I think we really have to use this moment to think about what it means for all of us to live sustainably.
All right, so a couple of points there to follow up on. Are you saying you don't see that much distinction between a 10-point buck and a big game hunt?
I would like not to be quoted as saying that.
No, it's okay. I want to make sure I understand, because I think it goes back to
there are ways of doing this legally. It still is legal to do this in those countries. And, you know, Larry and I wrote this last weekend in the DNC about the rhino that was the privilege to hunt down. The rhino was sold to a Texas millionaire for $350,000. That rhino needed to be removed from the herd because he was preventing the breeding. Rhinos are very close to extinction, and anything that we can do to encourage the breeding of rhinos, we need to be doing. So was that the best way to remove that rhino? I don't know, but I do know that it raised $350,000 that was supposedly used for anti-poaching efforts. So that helped rhinos in two ways, and I'm in favor of that.
Okay. Well, and also, there's a distinction also, legally a distinction, between hunting, big game hunting, and of endangered species versus non-endangered species, and then bringing back the body parts. It is illegal to bring back into the United States body parts of an endangered species. Lion is not listed right now as endangered or threatened. Probably will be come late this year, if everything proceeds as we expect it to at the federal government level. So there's legal issues. I think there's moral and ethical issues. But again, I'm not sure that us as an institution, the Seneca Park Zoo, weighing into trophy hunting is accomplishing what our mission is, which is conservation of species globally.
You know, the only other thing I would add is that the animal welfare issue here, and what has been reported about the way that Cecil was killed, that I think we all can agree with was not appropriate.
The crossbow, and then it took 40 hours to finally find the animal and kill him with a gun. There is an animal welfare issue, and that's to me, that's part of the ethics and morals mm-hmm. of appropriate hunting. You have to take
the,
all of those
the line
pieces.
For me here.
Yeah, all of those pieces into consideration.
And that's assuming, and this is an important point to make, that's assuming that what we're hearing in the reports is correct.
Right.
And I think a lot of people in the news media are now assuming that if those details were incorrect, we'd probably be hearing from Walter Palmer or his attorney or someone associated with the hunt. But we're not exactly sure. The report was that they lured this animal out.
Right.
I guess you can do that by tying a dead animal onto part of the vehicle you're in, and then the lion will come out after it. So all of that in play, I guess what we're saying is that is makes us feel a little queasy.
Right.
Oh, absolutely. And you bring up an important point from the standpoint that Wangi is a bounded, you know, there's a perimeter to the national park. If that lion had crossed that perimeter in the zoo, we'd call a code one, an escaped lion, which we drill for and practice all the time. But essentially, that animal escaped from what, from all intents and purposes, is a mega zoo. The Hwangi is, like most major parks, are bounded by either human habitation, actually fenced in, farmland. There's a number of ways that a perimeter is created. And he escaped from his sanctuary. He was lured, but he still crossed that boundary. And that's something that I think people need to understand, that Africa is, or any other country, is not filled with the wild the way we picture it from the 20s and 30s. There's mm-hmm. there's tremendous amount of human encroachment into the wild spaces. And we have to realize that part of the issue we're dealing with is that loss of habitat, and there's no place for these animals to migrate to or wander to without putting, in one way or another, their life at risk.
And that speaks to some of the human attitude towards sort of controlling an environment. And in all of the commentary about Cecil the Lion in the last week, I saw a number of links to a comment made on Fox News this morning by Brian Kilmeade. They had shown some video of a surfer punching a great white shark in the face, and the surfer escaped. He was okay. It was a remarkable piece of video. And Brian Kilmeade said, you know, this was a sanctioned event. You'd think they would find a way to clear the water of these sharks. And it's in the ocean.
Right. That's to me, that's lack of awareness of what's really going on in our world. There's not, like I said, boundless prairie. Even in the United States, there's boundless cornfields, but there's not boundless prairie where bison used to roam to the tune of 60 million of them. So there's an awareness that's lacking, I think, that we need to really understand, and why our role is so important in preservation and education about what's really going on globally in animals' natural environments. Around the turn of the century, there was somewhere around, it's estimated, 500,000 lions in Africa. Today, 20 to 30,000. So there's a huge disconnect and misinterpretation. It's not Tarzan movies. It's not Hatari. It's not, you know, the great white hunter exploring these vast tracts of Africa anymore. There's a real issue surrounding that.
Right. And anytime you've got political instability and human poverty and population growth, which is going to lead to logging and mining that we're importing, by the way, for our electronics and other devices, you've got habitat encroachment. Less and less space, as Larry says, for animals to roam. Our Western vision of the wild is quite romantic and false.
This is where I think what happened with Cecil the Lion is an important educational moment. I've had Todd Moss on this program before, a Pittsford native who went to work for the Bush administration on African affairs and now writes, he's writing essentially Tom Clancy-style fiction, and very good fiction, set in Africa as a way of helping the public understand, because he said so often He says, well, I lived or worked in Africa. And people say the same thing we're talking about here. They have this old, outdated understanding. And one of the important points is that there are deeply impoverished parts of the entire continent, not all of it, but parts of it. Their population growth is much sharper than much of the rest of the world. There is a whole big issue of women's inequality when it comes to reproductive health, jobs for women, school education, and educational opportunity for women. And so all of those things we know lead to higher population growth. And so then the question becomes, what are we going to do here? If we went from how many lions, what did you say? We're down to 20 or 30,000 lions.
Correct.
From, what was the number before?
Approximately 500,000, it's estimated, at the turn of the 20th century.
So it's less than a tenth. And you can only imagine where we're going with this. And it's not all because Walter Palmer shot and killed a lion. It's not all because big game hunters are going taking all the lions. I think that's a part, probably a small part of it. It's more of a question on socioeconomics and political instability and everything Pamela just mentioned. But what do we start to do about it if we care about animal populations and we're half a world away?
If I could give you a straight answer, I think I'd be
right.
Solving
an easy answer, right?
Yeah. We need to live sustainably, and that's an easy thing to say, but very difficult to define. We need to address, in some way, human population growth. We need to address the economics of the area of concern. You know, whether it's Africa, whether it's Asia, South America, it's just such a horribly complex problem that really you, from my standpoint, you just have to keep plugging away, look to others that are in the field and are trying to find solutions. But it's not simply save animals in a vacuum. There's a whole plethora that you just went through of issues that impact conservation on the ground in poor countries.
But the same is true here locally and learning to live sustainably. You know, Edward Abbey, a great environmentalist, said the antidote to despair is action. And we can all take action. And while each individual may feel like their own action isn't enough, when collectively we all can make a difference. So whether it's making sure that, you know, only storm water is, or only rain is going down the storm drains, that we are taking care of our own river health here, that we're turning off the water when we're brushing our teeth, that we're turning off the lights, that we don't really need to upgrade our phones every time the latest comes out, because that is affecting strip mining in these countries. That if we can wait for the we can make our TV last 5 years instead of needing a new one every 2 years. It actually does make a difference. We are causing a lot of the need for these communities. If we're aware that we're not buying products that have palm oil in them, or at least non-sustainable palm oil, then we're making a difference for lemurs and Bornean orangutans. So I think there are things that we can do if once we're aware. And once we're awake, it's hard to go back to sleep.
I see the phone starting to ring. And if you want to join the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. Larry Sorrell is the director of the Seneca Park Zoo. Pamela Reed Sanchez, executive director of the Zoo Society. You can call the program 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. And before we get to your phone calls, here is the first comment that comes in online. And it says, you should know that hunting in Africa, a.k.a. evil trophy hunting, actually contributes to saving animals. The money from legal, ethical hunts supports local villages and anti-poaching efforts. In most places, the meat has to be donated to local villages, and the locals get paid as guides and trackers. In places that hunting is banned, the locals see no economic value in the animals, and they are viewed as a dangerous nuisance. When that happens, the animals are killed in greater numbers than when they are being hunted. It sounds to me that what the dentist did was neither legal nor ethical, which makes him a poacher, not a hunter.
Absolutely. I think that person really touched on the complexity of the issues and where the money goes and where the meat goes and where the ethics and morals are. And that's why you need to explore the question. One needs to explore the question and be able to tweeze out the illegal, unethical from the ethical, legal, moral operation of hunting.
Mm-hmm. Let me read a quick comment here, and then we'll get to your phone calls. William says, I hunt, and the killing of this lion was appalling to me. Hunting education matters. Claiming ignorance is not okay. He's referring, I think, to Walter Palmer saying, I didn't know that what that luring the lion out of the sanctuary, you know, you can't do that, that we thought it was okay, that Walter Palmer was saying, I really thought I was doing something that was legal. And again, as Larry said earlier, as Pamela said earlier, we may feel sort of sick about it being legal, but technically, in some ways, there's plenty that happens that Walter Palmer has already engaged in that is legal.
Right.
So William is writing to us saying, I hunt, hunting education matters, and claiming ignorance is not okay. What do you think?
Again, I think it's a different piece of the same issue that we've been talking about. Hunting is not evil. Immoral, illegal, unethical hunting is. And he's right, to claim ignorance is not an excuse. And if the facts that we're hearing, which is always a challenge, you know, as far away as we are from Africa.
Yes.
If the facts are correct and that lion was seen to have a collar, well, that, you know, that again, that brings it into a whole different, what should I have done? If you were doing everything legally. If you weren't, then you want to hide the fact that you killed an elephant with a collar.
Yeah.
So we have enough trouble trying to tweeze out real facts mm-hmm. from St. Louis, from Baltimore, from New York City, issues that go on, let alone trying to do it, you know, half a world away.
I think that's fair. And that's why I'd love for Walter Palmer to sit down and talk a little bit more about this. I understand he probably feels like his own life is in danger. And it's unfortunate for the people who worked for him.
Right.
They may
right.
lose their jobs. And there's a lot of, unfortunately, I would say, collateral damage to this kind of a story. But when you've paid $50,000 and you want a lion, my fear is that you're going to ignore, oh, I didn't see a collar. I thought it was okay to lure it out.
I don't think that's true. I have a friend locally who will remain anonymous who used to do big game hunting like this. And he did everything quite legally, and he made sure of it. He's a huge lover of the outdoors, as most hunters are. And most fishermen, they're actually great conservationists. And
maybe even Walter Palmer, by the way.
Right. We don't know. Are there some people that do this all wrong? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But for those that do it correctly, I have a hard time arguing against it. As the one person wrote in, and as Ted Nugent, who has been involved in this issue as well and has done this big game hunting, says, if it's done correctly and all of the meat is used, there's not a single part of that animal that isn't used appropriately for the people in the village. And it's done legally and it supports the community. And it's hard to argue that. You're talking about people living in pretty serious poverty. So it's a tough issue.
And it's also not new. I mean, Teddy Roosevelt, you see plenty of pictures of former president after his own presidency ended, traveled, and plenty of big game kills, as you mentioned, George Eastman, many others. So.
You know, and I just have to go back to the fact that the illegal hunting like this is not really the issue with endangered animals. It's the poaching of elephants, the fact that 2/3 of the forest elephants have been poached in the last decade for their ivory. And we're not talking about that. We're talking about a single lion mm-hmm. who's not on the endangered list.
Right.
Larry?
Well, if Cecil's death, as unfortunate as it is, stimulates long-term real conservation discussion and action, I think that's maybe finding the silver lining in a bad situation. It's putting a name. As Pamela said, was a magnificent fuzzy creature, which we're very much attracted to. But if all of this can put long-term positive discussion and action on conservation issues, then maybe we can take a little bit of positive out of it, rather than it just being a social media storm for the week until something else comes along.
That's why I said, hey, if you're fired up, if you think there's too much attention on this, you wait 24 hours and we will have moved past it, and that will be gone. And that's why I think this teachable moment is an opportunity to learn about Africa, to learn a little bit more about conservation. Let me grab Tom in Rochester. Go ahead, Tom.
They were studying Cecil for about 13 years. Could we ever get a report or a story or something of what they found out about this particular lion?
I thought they were studying him around since 2008, if I had read correctly. So I think about the last 7 years.
I don't know. I heard 13.
Okay. Well, he's 13 years old.
Okay.
But
so do you think you can get a report and let us all know what was so extraordinary about him?
Well, it wasn't so much him as an individual in isolation that they were studying. What they were looking at is the lion's use of the environment in Hwangi and how it impacts lion populations and prey populations. So it's he's included in several published articles, I'm sure, but not identified as Cecil. And an individual. It's not his life story per se. It's how he fits into the environment and impacts other lions and prey species.
And that's what the value of this kind of research and this study, especially when you've got a population declining as sharply as lions has, because as Larry and Pamela have been telling us, lions, there are still 20,000 to 30,000, and then you look at poaching elephants, very different issue. Maybe should spark a little bit more outrage than the death of this lion has. What was the species that are only four left in the world? Northern white rhinos.
Right.
Okay. Four are left?
Four are left.
I mean, how do we get down to four? That's also kind of a horrifying number.
Basically the same thing. Loss of habitat combined with poaching.
Okay. So I appreciate the fact that we are at least learning more about this, and that this is the pivot point, that we were fired up. I think Pamela's right. Cecil had a name and was a beautiful, beautiful creature. I mean, they are majestic creatures. It's hard to argue that. But now is a great time for us to keep learning. Let's take a short break and come back. We'll take more of your phone calls. We'd love to hear from you. 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Larry Sorrell, the zoo director, Pamela Reed Sanchez, the executive director of the Seneca Park Zoo Society, our guests for the hour. Coming up in our second hour, we're talking about COMEDA, the County of Monroe Industrial Development Agency, the agency responsible for handing out large tax breaks to projects that perhaps need the help to create jobs locally. Are they doing an effective job? Democrat and Chronicle reporter Megan McDermott just authored a comprehensive report on COMEDA. She joins us in studio to break it all down.
One side effect of the increase in opiate abuse in New England, grandparents having to take custody of their grandchildren.
It's the hardest decision that you can make because you love the parent and you love the grandchildren and you're right there in the middle.
I'm Melissa Block, grandparents forced to become parents again, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back. Marty wants to know what your guests think is the best thing to come out of all the coverage of Cecil the Lion so far. I'll start with Larry Sorrell.
The best thing is the continued conversation that hopefully leads to action for conservation. I think I got those in the right order. it's such a complex and difficult issue. And again, we've talked about it in multiple ways. It's not happening in isolation. It's part of the entire socioeconomic issues that we're dealing with globally that are extraordinarily complex. But ignoring it and not having the conversation that leads to action, I think, is not the right way to go. We do want to have the conversation. We do want to take action.
Pamela?
Right. If we can use this as an opportunity to educate people, as Larry said, not only about what's happening with endangered species worldwide, whether it's African penguins or Sumatran tigers, and not just make it something that's happening out there across the a half a world away, but things that are happening right here in our own backyard, lake sturgeon, for example, eastern Mississauga rattlesnakes, and let people know that there is action that they can, that they don't have to just tweet out a social media rant, that they can actually take action to make a difference.
Right. Because we're seeing it differently, but fundamentally the same thing that goes on right in our backyard. Yeah. We have prime breeding group for an extremely rare rattlesnake right here in New York. If we let people know where that was, it would be raided for the pet trade. People collecting these snakes for the pet trade.
For the illegal pet trade.
Illegal pet trade. We're working very hard at reintroducing sturgeon into the Genesee River in Lake Ontario, partnering with the U.S. Geological Survey. Part of the issues there is the subsistence fishing right. of newly emigrated people that are trying to feed their families, but when they catch a sturgeon, it's just one more fish on the plate when it really shouldn't be. We have a growing black bear population that, not heavily, but is occasionally poached for their gallbladder, sending them to the Far East. So it doesn't just happen in Africa. It happens here in our own backyard. And that's the kind of discussion that also is extraordinarily important.
Yeah. Let me grab Adam in Wayne County kind of on that same point. Go ahead, Adam.
Yeah, it's funny you guys are talking, got back to the local species and hunting that goes on. But I don't know if any of you guys are familiar with the story of Yellow Yellow, a black bear in the Adirondacks and the High Peaks. She was a...
Oh, go ahead. You can tell us the story. Go ahead.
Well, a couple, 5 or 6 years ago, we took a trip up to, we hiked Mount Marcy, and during our stay there, we encountered a big female black bear and two cubs. And over that weekend, we had talked to the ranger. He said, oh, yeah, that's Yellow Yellow. She clearly had two tags in her ears, a yellow and a yellow. So that she had her name. She was documented. She came into our site 2 nights with her cubs and kind of gave us an exciting time. But a few years after that trip where we had encountered her, she was killed by a hunter who said that the tags were not in her ears. And I just found it kind of hard to believe. And it was covered in the New York Outdoor News, the newspaper. It's a great paper. But it was just a, like Cecil the Lion, when an animal is known and almost put above some of the other ones just to study and he's taken care of them, tracked, kind of does build a personality for that animal. And people who encounter them and know them can remember them after they're gone. It's almost like you have a memory of that bear. The ranger told us she had cubs for the last 15 years, and she was a very well-known bear in that area, famous for breaking into people's bear containers.
I think you make a really good point, not only about bringing it back locally, but the tourism that comes out of this.
Sure.
Yellow Yellow might have become sort of a tourist attraction for those who are camping in the Adirondacks. And so many of these sanctuary-type places in Africa and other places, they are tourist attractions. They are driving the economy there. And so Cecil probably was seen multiple times by tourists who went back for safari. The more
it's
animals that are
the
gone...
Professional hunters with all the sites that they have and the viewing stuff they can use, that they can't spot these things. And, I don't think the tagged black bears are necessarily protected, but like a collared lion should never have been shot. It's just crazy, but...
Well, the other piece to that is part of what you brought up is identifying and creating a relationship with an individual. That always evokes more emotion than this nondescript, unknown black bear that was killed.
Sure. That's the psychology of this here.
Absolutely.
It's not a surprise. Mm-hmm. People react very emotionally when they feel like they understand the animal. We shouldn't be surprised at that. I don't think we should tell people they shouldn't feel that way. I just think that's why we're trying to take this hour to pivot it and say, what's the broader real question here?
Right.
And the fact that people are feeling this kind of compassion.
That was a great time. And to hear, it was almost reading the obituary,
the
hunter shot her, and that was it. But they knew who she was. And They gave her eulogy. So,
well, Adam, thanks for the call.
Thank you guys for the call.
I appreciate the story. I mean, I think it's interesting. Pamela, go ahead.
I hope that people can take that kind of compassion that they feel for Cecil and expand it out to other species and other animals and begin using that to drive them towards learning more about what's really happening.
I also think there's no doubt that big game tourism is a real thing.
Yes.
There is a part of me that thinks we've got to find a way, and it's not going to happen overnight or in a year, or probably a decade, to get to a world where there's a little bit more equality, there's a little better women's rights and education in Africa, that there are better schools and more political equality. I mean, that's a very complex set of issues, but I would love it if there were, you know, we didn't have these villages that were relying in many ways on the meat from a kill or the money that comes from some of these efforts. But
some of what this money from tourism is doing is helping to educate people and to give them skills so that they are not out poaching and learning how to protect their livestock from a lion kill. And someone was telling me a story about having been in Africa recently, and I'm sorry, I don't remember which country, but that they learned about a program that if you have livestock taken by a lion, you are given money to reimburse you for that lion. You are also given training in how not to let it happen again. And if it does happen again, you are reimbursed a smaller amount of money. So there, and that money is coming from tourism. So when we are taking part in these programs to go on African safari, we're actually helping in that way as well.
Let me grab it on the phone call. This is Andy in Arundakoit. Go ahead, Andy.
Hi there. Great show today. I've called in before. I'm an animal rights activist and a vegan. And sitting here waiting, the more that's said, I'm thinking, which direction do I want to go with this? But I think with Cecil the lion, when I listen to people talk, they're flabbergasted that somebody would be so mean and inflict pain on an animal and shoot them like that. And then I think these same people eat cows, pigs, and chickens that they don't know. Like you said, if you knew these animals, and there's millions of vegans now, we don't eat animals. And it's a divide in this world and in this country between meat eaters and vegans now. And people I know in my life who are outraged by this will blindly look away from the 10 billion animals that they eat every year that we pay people to do horrific stuff to. That I could go on and on about that. The other thing's this, saying that, though, I have more respect for hunters. I have hunters in my life than people who just go blindly to Wegmans or Tops and buy meat. And these animals have lived horrific lives. Saying that, this guy, the dentist who shot this animal, when you look at the smiles on his face, this isn't the only one. He's shot a bunch of animals. I feel like this smell should be reserved for if you just cured cancer. There's something really disturbing about somebody so happy about killing a beautiful animal. And then my last thing is this. I don't know about Seneca Park Zoo, but I know up until recent history, when animals in zoos become decrepit, especially down in the South and in Texas, there is a whole ugly industry where they were sold off to roadside attractions and canned hunts, especially in Texas. There's hundreds of canned hunts.
Andy, let me let Larry respond. First of all, thank you for the call, Andy. Larry, his concern about zoos, for example. Go ahead.
Well, for accredited, AZA-accredited zoos. Now, there's like 2,400-plus federally licensed exhibitors in the United States. There's 225, approximately, AZA-accredited zoos. That's not what we do. We have committed, our code of ethics is to care for these animals cradle to grave, even as they make their transition to other institutions. So for us, and I can only speak for really AZA-accredited zoos, what he's talking about for zoos doesn't happen. Now I lost my train of thought.
Okay,
so talk to Pamela.
let me let our listeners know about something that Andy raised, the question on the animals that we eat and the way we treat the animals we eat. And I think there is an important point in there. I think it's possible a future generation, we will look back at the way some animals were treated that we consume and be somewhat embarrassed by it. And on this program in October, you can look it up online. We've got a great archive of all our Connections podcasts. We did two separate programs in the fall looking at the way we treat chickens and the way we treat pigs. We looked at gestation crates, things like that, who's using them, who's not. For chickens, Nicholas Kristof of the New York Times wrote a piece called Abusing the Chickens We Eat, and it led me to wonder who's raising chickens locally that we can feel really good about. And the answer were not many, but some. And we invited them on this program, and we had a very good conversation about that. You can find those podcasts online, and I would encourage you to seek them out because I think those are very valid questions. And I think it's good to know, you know, not all of us are going to react the exact same way, but it's good to know, what are the animals that we eat? What are their living conditions? Are we comfortable with that, et cetera? I think those are at least fair questions, and we've covered that a couple times on this program. So, Andy, thanks for bringing that up. It was top of mind. Vox.com this past week, Ezra Klein wrote that if you eat chickens, you're doing something worse than Walter Palmer did to Cecil. Now, that's his opinion because of the way the chicken industry in this country operates on a large scale. But again, go back, listen to that program if you want to learn more about what's going on locally, and hopefully we can be a little bit more educated. I'm going to get back to the phones in just a second. Let me see here. Wiley in Honeyoy Falls wants to jump in. Go ahead, Wiley.
Hey there. How you doing today?
Good.
Me and my friend Mickey are just sitting around here listening to the show. How you doing, folks? Shut up. gets in the way sometimes.
Wiley, is everything okay down there? Are you sure?
I think so.
Okay.
I was just listening to this, and actually, I was calling the wrong number. I was calling Scott Regan's program, and I kept getting a busy signal until I realized what number. So anyway, this guy that shot the lion, now I could get nasty, and I don't want to get too gross for the audience out there. But, you know, I think he said he did it because he loved it. Did I hear you say that?
Yeah, that's what he said. He said that he thought it was legal, that he trusted the guides he was with, and it was an activity he's always loved.
He's always loved that, right. So I think what they ought to do is, like, hang him over a lion pit, let them jump up and grab his legs, you know, a couple times, and then turn him upside down and let them bite his head off and then put it up on their lion wall.
Now, Wiley, that's a little bit hyperbolic here.
Okay, never mind.
And I know you're sort of kidding, but the guy is in hiding right now. And I
he better be, because I'm going to send all the lions down to his house.
Fortunately.
There used to be a lion over in Ionia, maybe some people remember. And he was in a cage, and he was in a double cage, and it was right across the street from the Locust Lawn Restaurant. Probably a lot of people remember that place. And the cage is still there. And this lion sat in there for years and just sat there. He didn't do anything. He couldn't do anything because it was a little tiny cage inside of a great big cage. And people could go over and stand in front of the wire, and the little girls and boys would point at him and stuff, and the lion would sleep. And then they'd throw big half a cow out there for him to eat. And there were buffalo in the field next to it. It was very cool, but, you know, the sport, it's a sport when you pay somebody to pull the animal out of the cage and then you pull the trigger. Come on. And then there was a thing in Facebook with a guy with a rifle hanging up in the air and his fist up in the air, leaning next to I don't know if it was a white leopard, but it was a leopard, I'm pretty sure, or a cheetah. We can see the blood and the coals in the thing, you know, a big, big white hunter with a capital W. And you looked about 35, and all the comments were you could imagine, you know, what an idiot and blankety blanks this guy was.
Well, Wiley, let me jump in here just to say we've covered a lot of ground there. But look, he mentioned a cheetah. We actually had a question online from Alicia where she said, how do you even define big game, and are there rules on what animals can or can't be killed locally or domestically? Larry and Pamela briefly touched on that when it comes to some of the animal populations locally. So, yeah, I mean, you're right, Wiley. We've been focused on this lion. There are other big games. There's big cats. But let's answer Alicia's question before I get back to the phones. Locally, Rochester region, or even domestically, what should we know about what animals can and cannot be taken, as some have said, or killed?
That's all regulated by the Department of Environmental Conservation, New York State. What is appropriate to hunt, what season it's appropriate to hunt, what you can't hunt.
Or fish.
Same thing. And in foreign countries, it is regulated by their equivalent of wildlife management. The one exception, which we touched on earlier, is if the U.S. deems something either threatened or endangered, that can't be imported into the United States without very strict permitting. So it's a you're getting into complex legal issues for those kinds of issues. But locally, it is DEC regulates hunting and fishing, what can and can't be captured and when.
Okay. Cherie in Brighton. Go ahead, Cherie.
Hello. Thank you for enlightening the public on a very difficult subject. I think the gist of this really is how we treat other species on our planet. And I think we need to be more mindful of the ethical ramifications of luring animals from their sanctuaries and their safe areas where they feel they're safe and they have a right to live. And I applaud you for having this show and making these things, making all these details more public, because Cecil matters, and so do all the other animals. But Cecil brings this to the public's light, and I think there will be a lot of people that will take thought in hearing what you say and hearing, you know, finding out about the details of this. Also, I would like to say that I'm quite nervous, but I am an animal rights activist. I do write a lot of letters to politicians. I sign a lot of petitions for ethical treatment of animals, and this is an ongoing battle. We do need to keep aware of what's going on in the world as enlightened, informative people, but we do need to look in our own backyards as well. And I applaud the Seneca Park Zoo for becoming more public and their awareness of the sturgeons and just enlightening people about animals and how they live, how to treat them, and so forth. Thank you for doing that.
And yeah.
I love your show. I listen every day, and this is the first time I've ever called, but thank you for doing the show, really.
You're very kind, Cherie, and thank you for the phone call, and really thanks to our guest this hour for helping educate the public on these matters in a way that is not so hyperbolic and black and white. I mean, I think those initial moments after the death of Cecil the Lion came out were those hyperbolic black and white moments, and now I think is the time to try, if we're actually inclined, to actually learn. And Pamela Reed Sanchez from the Seneca Park Zoo Society and Larry Sorrell, the zoo director, are here. It's a good moment, Pamela, to remind our listeners, if they want to get involved with the Zoo Society, what it is that you do and how they can get involved.
Sure. And I just want to take a moment to thank Cherie for her nice comments. We are really trying to raise the awareness in the community about what a zoo's real purpose is, which is to save animals for extinction and let people know the conservation leaders that we are. We are truly an environmental organization. And to get involved with the Zoo Society, we are the private nonprofit partner to Monroe County's Park Department that runs the zoo. Larry's side of the house is the animal care, animal health, and facilities, and my side of the house is all of the interactions with people. So our members, our visitors, all of the education programs that we run. And to get involved, all you need to do is be a volunteer or become a member or just come visit us.
I also want to address one quick point. We had a caller in the last few minutes who'd called in and said that there are so many other things that really ought to provoke outrage. And she raised a number of points, including the way children are treated in this country, children in schools, things like that. And I would just say to that caller, you are right. This is not about an hour of telling people that this is more important than those subjects. And we have covered and will continue to cover those subjects, but I understand that sentiment and I don't disagree with it. I wanted to take this hour to invite these guests on to talk about an issue that so much of the world was focused on, but maybe to try to go beyond that, to go beyond getting angry and then asking about what's going on, is it more complex than that, and what can we take to understand. So some final thoughts here. We've got about a minute left. Larry Sorrell, what do you want to leave the audience with today?
Well, I think one of the things that is important to understand specifically for the zoo is that we are financially active in a number of areas. Just by visiting the zoo, you're helping support our work with the sturgeon. But what you'll find when you come to the zoo is multiple opportunities to contribute to elephant conservation through the International Elephant Foundation, to penguin conservation through SANCOB, which works directly in South Africa, with orangutan and other animal conservation through Health and Harmony. And those opportunities, when you visit the zoo, are presented to you. It's a financial contribution, but it is certainly a great opportunity to continue to the work that we're doing globally. Last year, it was about $50,000.
A little more than that, yeah.
That we sent around the world directly. We don't take any cut of it. Doesn't support our operations at all. It's directly to animals in need around the world, and we're seeing that grow again this year. It should be an even greater amount.
And so much of what you heard from Pamela and Larry this hour are the kinds of subjects they wrote about in the Democrat and Chronicle. The piece they wrote a few days ago was "Let Cecil's Death Raise Awareness of Species Survival." Seen it shared in a lot of places. Easy to find if you want to read it and share it. It's out there now. And we know they have a lot of things going on. In fact, we're going to bring them back and talk about a number of those issues very soon. But thank you for at least taking the opportunity at this moment, that this moment in this unique conversation, to explore it a little bit more. So my thanks to Larry Sorrell, the zoo director. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Evan.
Pamela Reed Sanchez from the Zoo Society. Always good to talk to you.
Thanks, Evan, very much.
And hope we answered as many questions as we could from our audience. Short break and talking Comida and your tax dollars next.